It's a good idea for you to learn about NordProtect, an identity theft protection service you can trust. I've been looking into it, and I think you should too. NordProtect is built to help users safeguard their identity with advanced, automated features that work in the background 24/7, such as dark web monitoring, credit monitoring, and security alerts. NordProtect plans come with financial coverage across a wide range of threats, from identity theft to online fraud and scams, so their users are covered when it matters most. NordProtect is all-in-one identity theft protection that equips you with everything you need to keep your identity safe. NordProtect offers three types of plans: silver, gold, and platinum, so that every user can find the perfect fit for their budget. Getting started is simple. You just buy your plan and complete a quick setup. NordProtect comes with identity theft recovery and cyber extortion protection for your peace of mind. Get an exclusive 5% off on NordProtect plans. Go to nordprotect.com/investtalk and use the code investtalk at checkout. You can also find the link in the episode description. NordProtect.com/investtalk and use code investtalk. The number of data breaches worldwide rises every year, going up by 211% from 2023 to 2024, due mainly to five mega breaches. Scams, identity theft, they all start with your personal data being exposed across various websites. It's on people search sites, in data broker databases, shady directories, AI answers, and even search results. That's the part most people don't see. Their home address, phone number, email accounts, and social security number aren't just leaked. They're being actively bought and sold by bad actors. But you can protect yourself now with Incogni. Incogni tracks down and removes your personal data from multiple sites, including online directories, people search sites, and even commercial databases. The Incogni process is fully automated for hundreds of known data brokers, companies that collect and sell your data without your consent. The categories of data brokers Incogni covers include marketing, recruitment, health information, risk mitigation, financial information, and people search sites. With Incogni, you can protect your privacy in three easy steps. Remember, they can't harm you if they can't find you. So, take back your personal data with Incogni. Use code INVESTTALK to get 60% off annual plans. Go to incogni.com/investtalk. You can also find the link in the episode description.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is InvestTalk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial portfolio manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Thursday, November 20th, 2025. Now, for those of you that can count, which I'm sure is everybody listening to this show, it is not lost on you that Thanksgiving is right around the corner. It is now exactly 1 week away. But as you've seen, the market ain't slowing down, because the market doesn't slow down, neither can we. And so we here at InvestTalk will be here, as we always are, each and every day, with one goal, one objective, one mission for this podcast, and that is to help make you a better and more informed investor. Now, in order to do that, we bring a mixture of educational items to the table, actionable material to the table. But the most important part of this show are the finance and investment questions that you supply in order to help guide this conversation. We can't possibly know what is on your mind without your input. Now, usually in the show, I'll mention how in a little bit we'll go over today's market performance and all of these topics. And then we roll to a question submitted via voicemail earlier in the day. But we're not going to do that today because we have our first live call. James from Sonoma, you got a question about CRC. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
Well, I'm just looking at it. I'm looking to buy it. It's a very small company. It's less than $4 billion. I read a couple articles about this, and that the idea seems to be they're going to have a little bit more freedom. They're in carbon capture, and the regulations in California, I guess, are going to be loosened. And they pay a nice dividend. Of course, the dividend can't remain that high because of the increases can't remain that high because it's only been around for 10 years, 11 years. So just wonder what you guys thought of them.
Yeah, of course. Well, California Resources Corporation, ticker CRC, it is a U.S.-based independent energy and carbon management company. So they focus primarily on crude oil and on natural gas production, really in the state of California. Now, 100% of their revenue is derived from the United States, all of it coming from that oil and natural gas segment. And I mean, you mentioned it. It is a small cap company, $4.760 billion market cap. And they have a little bit of debt, but not too concerning, only about $1.2 billion in debt. You can see that right here. Now, they have been doing particularly well relative to, rather they have the potential to do well because there's been favorable regulatory shifts in the region. Certainly, they've done aggressive debt reduction recently. And so they put themselves in a better position than they have been for quite some time. One issue, though, that I'm seeing with CRC is that it's not really bearing out in growing revenue. Now, understandably, revenue is going to be sluggish, right? This is a company that is still predicated upon the oil and natural gas industry. And oil has been doing pretty poorly recently, right? We talk about oil each and every day, how its performance is, and it has not been doing well. Now, you did mention that the state did recently pass legislation easing environmental regulatory burden, and that could stand to benefit this company right here. They've had acquisitions, their operational performance has been better, and their carbon management strategy has been gaining a bit of traction. But that hasn't really been able to overcome what is going on with oil more broadly. And so, you know, the company's down 11.12% year-to-date, down 20.70% over the past 52 weeks, and it's actually still underperforming much of its industry there. So I think this is kind of a competing headwinds, right? Headwind and tailwind. The tailwind being operational efficiency, regulatory reduction in an area that could benefit the business. But then at the same time, oil's just performing so poorly. Demand is not there. And at least in the short and medium term, I mean, we've been saying this anytime someone calls about energy companies, specifically oil companies, not really much in the short to medium term as a catalyst. As a long-term investment, oil certainly going to be an important part of the driving economy. But again, in the short and medium term, I think generally within the energy space, I'd be leaning towards more of those growth areas and less towards oil. Thanks for the call. Looks like we got another live call from Michael in Utah. How can I help you?
Yeah, I was just calling on to have you look at DoorDash. It's been falling quite a bit for the past, 2 months, month and a half. And it closed at 187 today. I was just kind of wondering if this is a good buying point or what you think on a buying point would be for this. Because looking at the earnings, it's earned since 2019. It's always been in the positive, so it's a good, strong company. I'm just curious about what a good buying point would be for you guys.
Sure. Let's take a look at DoorDash. For those of you who don't know, DoorDash is one of those online, on-your-phone food ordering systems, right? The burrito taxis, if you will. You want Chipotle, and you don't want to walk for it. Well, DoorDash, Uber Eats, Postmates, this is kind of where you would want to go. Now, year-to-date, it's up 11.91%, up 9.02%. over the past 52 weeks, but it's had a bit of a rough 3 months, down 23% over the last 3 months. And in spite of this reduction in price, right, in spite of this drawdown, it's still trading at 62 times price to forward-looking earnings. Now, this company is new to making money, right? They did not make money up until really December of 2024, the first time their net income was positive $123 million. But growth has been pretty crazy over the past 6 years, up 64.7% revenue is on an annual basis going back to 2019. In that time, right, even year over year, net income growing from $123 million to projected to be $999 million in 2025. Margins expanding from the red into the black. Net margin projected to be up from 1.1% to about 7.3% this upcoming year. And so, you know, what's really been driving them is something that you mentioned, record growth in orders and revenue. And we've seen that consistently quarter over quarter. They have global expansion, aggressive investment, and pushing those margins higher. So anything that you see here from an individual company perspective, you're thinking, well, this is a good time to buy, but you can't really outrun those macro headwinds. And so what you're seeing is signs of a weakening labor market, signs of a weakening economy, consumer pressure, certainly. And so what would you cut back on, right? If you have to cut back on spending. One of the things is companies like DoorDash, companies like Postmates. And so I think with this headwinds on the consumer, that's really why you're seeing this drawdown in price over the next 3 months. So you got to ask yourself, if the headwind is what is pushing against this company in spite of good performance, what's going to change that? Do you see that changing in the short and medium term? I probably don't think so. And so does that justify buying a company that's trading at 9.2 times price to book, 62.3 times price to earnings? I wouldn't say so either. So, you know, this is a pretty good example of how oftentimes you can't escape the macro picture. So for now, I would probably keep DoorDash on my watch list. Don't think it would necessarily be a good time to enter here. Thanks for the call. We are moving very quickly. We've already gotten through two live calls, and hopefully there are a lot more to come. But you know what? It is very likely that you will probably be making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. Before you do so, I recommend you look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It's free, and it is posted now on investtalk.com. My phone lines are open, waiting for you now at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think's a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
But technically, right now, I like it. I like the momentum. But once again, I don't like those fundamentals.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Calling to ask about CORE in Maine.
This is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call. Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that very interesting when I learned about the True Age Test from True Diagnostic, and this knowledge has completely changed the way I think about my health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus over 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Here's the good news. 90% of aging is driven by lifestyle and environment, not just genetics. So how we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a huge role in how fast or slow we age. That means we have a lot of control over it. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs, just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report about your aging and health. True Diagnostic doesn't just give you a number. They give you a personalized report full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to slow aging and improve your health over time. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to truediagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
In the early days, InvestTalk was Jerry Klein and Steve Peasley. Now the torch has been passed and a new generation of hosts is on the job, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero. So when you've got finance and investment questions, Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
We got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. So here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic: high yield savings versus treasury bills. Where should your cash live? We're going to compare high yield savings accounts and treasury bills, breaking down liquidity, safety, and after-tax returns so that you can choose the best parking spot for your short-term cash. Also, we'll touch on a slew of delayed data that has showed strong hiring, but offers very little clarity for the Federal Reserve. We'll also touch on how a binge of AI borrowing is starting to get investors to back away from corporate bonds. Should we have time at the end of the show, another report, or rather the latest report from the Congressional Budget Office, signaling that maybe Trump's tariffs are going to reduce U.S. deficits by about $1 trillion less than previously thought. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Bright Spring Health Services, Inc., that is ticker BTSG, and another on converting a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel, and hopefully some more live calls throughout the show. Before we go any further, low, let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks negative across the board. Equities pretty low after trading a bit higher. Big whipsaw of a day. The S&P posting its fifth decline of the past six sessions. While the S&P 500 and NASDAQ pacing for their worst weekly performance since April. Big tech all lower. Other underperformers included pharma, semis, auto suppliers, cruise lines, grocers, software, and quantum computing. Outperformers included utilities, biotech, hospitals, some staple retailers, Walmart on the back of some positive earnings, insurance companies, regional banks, and home builders doing really well. Let's take a look at the bond side. Treasuries firmer across the curve, down 2 to 4 basis points. Dollar index, though, flat on the day. Gold finished down about 60 basis points on the day. Bitcoin having a rough stretch, down 3.2%. Lowest levels since April. Market flipping to risk off, you know, in the late morning. You saw a bit of a rally and then a bit of a retrench back down. Saw rotation out of big tech names, semi names, AI linked names, and more into the defensive side of the market. Nvidia really unable to hold on to its post earnings gains. It had a beat, it had a raise, it didn't really matter. But all in all, nothing really specific or incremental behind this move. You saw stretch valuations, technicals, markets simply falling back into its recent momentum unwind. Honestly, the easiest excuse for what was going on. Busy morning of data headlined by September non-farm payrolls, 119,000 ahead of the consensus. A bunch of data to go over. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And in spite of all of it, the odds of a December cut a bit higher, but still just at 40% chance overall. So we'll talk about that data a little bit later, but we got a live call from Joe in the Castro Valley. Got a question about CIB.
Yeah, hi. I just found this recently. I like some of the numbers I'm seeing on the chart, but it's a foreign stock. It's a bank in Colombia, and just wanted to get your take on it.
Sure, great question. CIB is a holding company. They are in the financial services sector, and they are from Colombia. Most of their business does come from Latin America. Geographically, about 78% of the revenue comes from Colombia, 11% from Panama, 5% from Guatemala. Now, they are a relatively big company, $15 billion market cap. Heck of a year, 97.30% year to date, 24.55% over the past 3 months, 83.87% over the past 52 weeks. So very, very strong returns here. Interest income growth solid at 9.7%. Net interest income growth solid at 6.7%. You know, I like what I'm seeing here too. They don't have much debt on their balance sheet that's really going to hurt or lever them too much. Well, the concern is, well, we have tensions rising in Latin America. What does increased tensions with Venezuela, what effect might that have on investments here? Either way, I think getting Latin American exposure is a good idea. And this financial services company looks pretty solid. Thanks for the call. Moving into a break, so to come, my focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now at 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Year-end tax toolkit, RMD planning, tax loss harvesting, and deferral strategies. It's all happening online and free of charge. The new Wealth Webinar, Tuesday, December 9th from 11 a.m. to 12 noon Pacific Time. Pre-register now at investtalk.com.
Should you be keeping your cash in a high-yield savings account, or should you be moving it into treasury bills? That's a question that we get a lot, not just from clients, but from callers as well. So let's take a look at what may make sense for you depending on your situation. Now, in a higher rate environment, both choices look pretty good. Both are safe. They offer solid returns, but they're not really built for the exact same purpose. And depending on how often you need access to your money, one option is going to be a far better choice than the other. So let's walk through some of the differences here and try and answer some of the most common questions people have. First, the basics, right? A high yield savings account, which most people abbreviate as an HYSA, is just a regular savings account, but it pays a much higher rate of interest. These accounts can pay 4% or even more in some circumstances. And like checking accounts, other savings accounts, they have that FDIC insurance up to $250,000. Now, a treasury bill or T-bills is basically a short-term loan to the U.S. government. Terms run anywhere from 4 weeks to 1 year. And once you buy the treasury bill, the rate is locked in for the entire term. So the real difference is simple here. An HYSA gives you immediate liquidity. It's like a savings account, a checking account, in that you can move it in a relatively short period of time, while a treasury bill gives you a commitment. You can get your money out of the HYSA anytime you need it, but for a treasury bill, right, you're required to stay invested until maturity, or you have to go into the open market and find a buyer to get your money. Which one's safer? Honestly, both are extremely safe. I mentioned at the top, HYSAs are insured by the federal government up to $250,000. While treasury bills, well, they're backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. Can I lose money? Not with an HYSA, as long as you stay under those FDIC limits. With treasury bills, you could only lose a little if you sell early before they mature. But if you hold to maturity, your return is about as guaranteed as any debt instrument could be. Remember, there is always risk. Now, which one pays more right now? Today's yields are pretty similar. Generally, they're in about the 4% range here. But the key difference is this. HYSA rates move. Treasury bill rates do not. Now, I don't mean that treasury rates couldn't go down, right? We know that these things move. But the bill that you buy, that is locked in. If the Federal Reserve cuts rates, your HYSA rate is going to fall. But the treasuries that you've already bought, not so much. Now, I mentioned the big difference here is liquidity, and that's really the practical difference between the two. HYSAs give you immediate access. You can transfer money in, you can transfer money out, really whenever you want. A treasury bill, though, that ties up your cash until it matures, or until, if you absolutely need the money, you decide to sell. But in that case, you may lose out on some interest in the process, or you may have to take a cut based upon what the total value would be if you hold it to maturity. So a general rule here that I like to think about is, okay, if I need immediate access, my emergency fund, well, that probably belongs in an HYSA, not in treasury bills. But there are tax differences. This is where treasury bills have a clear edge for certain savers. HYSA interest is taxed at the federal, state, and local level. Treasury bills, though, it's taxed federally, but not at the state and local level. For savers in high tax states, so your California, your New York, and your Jersey, this can make a meaningful difference in your take-home yield. And yes, you can hold treasury bills in an IRA, a Roth IRA, or most retirement accounts. Inside those accounts, the tax benefits become a little bit less important, but the safety and liquidity profile still matters. Now, the question is, why does my HYSA rate move up and down, but treasury bills don't? Well, HYSAs are floating rate. They're just like any other floating rate savings accounts, whereas that treasury bill, as I previously mentioned, is an obligation with a debt covenant with a certain rate that will not move. Now, you know, oftentimes people are saying, okay, well, how do I get access to these treasury bills? Well, there's different ways that you can get access to treasuries. You can buy them directly at auction, which if you're a financial institution, that's probably how you do it. You can work with a broker to get access to individual bonds, individual bills. Or you can invest in ETFs, vehicles that give you access to different maturity levels, 0 to 3 months. Maybe, you know, if you want to go even shorter than treasury bills, or you can get ETFs that give you that exposure that you are looking for. I think the key here is that these are two different instruments that are helpful for different reasons. They both offer similar rates, but they have different liquidity profiles, tax profiles, and different ways for you to access them. Either way, if you're trying to invest your money, get better yield than your traditional savings account or your checking account, both treasury bills and HYSAs, high yield savings accounts, are excellent tools. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we will look into this topic, dollar cost averaging versus lump sum investing. What is the smarter move? We'll tackle this classic investing dilemma of putting your money in slowly versus investing it all at once, and explain why each strategy can make the most sense for real life investors. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. Joe from Kentucky, hang on, you are next.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Joe from Kentucky. You got a question about Humana. You own it, or are you looking to buy it?
Well, I'm probably looking to buy. I had it for years in the 2010s, which was good. Good climb to around 2020. A little after, but I sold it. I always go right back into my total stock market index fund. I'll buy single stocks here and there if I get lucky. You know, I would say 3 out of 4 times I've been kind of lucky, but that's all it is luck, I think, long term. But I was just curious, you know, it's gone down a downward trajectory for a while, and I just wanted your thoughts maybe on the next, I don't know if you can even go that far out, 2 to 3 year window, maybe 5 year window, and see if it's attractive.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, right? It's been a rough time generally for this company. Humana is a health insurance company, so they're a healthcare services company. They offer medical and specialty insurance, but a lot of their business comes from Medicare Advantage. Now, year to date, they're down 11.99%, down 23% over the past 3 months, down 24.04% over the past 52 weeks. You want to pull that back, right? 2023 and 2024, pretty poor performers relative to their industry, down, you know, 10 and 44% respectively. That was underperforming their industry by about 7 and 34% in those 2 years. And in spite of this decline, they're trading at about their average forward-looking price to earnings. Growth has slowed down quite a bit for this company. They've had margin pressures, right? Their net income margin has dropped significantly over the past couple quarters. And their dependence on Medicare Advantage has really been a problem for them as well. And so you see regulatory issues, you see, you know, lack of being able to stabilize some of these margins. And then you throw onto that, there's a lot of uncertainty in insurance, right? One of the big battles going on in Congress is over these Affordable Care Act subsidies. So the insurance business and how consumers interact with it could potentially be changing dramatically over the next couple months as there are competing bills from both sides of the political aisle. So it just adds another layer of uncertainty here into an industry, let alone a company that's been performing poorly. So, you know, I'm not seeing anything that shows that this company from a technical and momentum perspective is turning around here. You know, relative strength has been pretty weak going back to 2023. So, you know, for now, I'd be a little hesitant to enter a position into Humana. That is Humana, ticker H-U-M. Thanks for the call, Joe. Let's keep things moving and play a fresh listener question. Came in on 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Luke and Justin. I'm calling in from Orange County, California, and I have a question about converting a traditional IRA to a Roth. And to start with, I'm 60, so I'm not worried about the 59 and a half rule. But I am curious about how the five-year rules work. Is it true that I can take out the original amount at any time, but I cannot touch the earnings? Anyway, any information you could provide would be great. Thank you.
So that's a great question. So the five-year rule for Roth conversions says that each conversion has its own five-year clock before you can withdraw the converted principal penalty-free if you are under the age of 59 and a half. Now, the clock doesn't start on the date you make the conversion. It starts on January 1st of the year you made your conversion, not that actual date. The rule only affects the 10% early withdrawal penalty on converted amounts, not taxes, because when you're doing this conversion, right, the whole idea is you take from your traditional Roth, you're paying the taxes, and then you convert it. Now, once you hit that age of 59 and a half, the five-year conversion rule stops mattering. Only the separate 5 years since your first Roth contribution rule applies for tax for those earnings. And it determines when your earnings, not your contributions, can be withdrawn tax-free from your Roth. So again, if you're over 59 and a half, that rule only applies to the first contribution year. And similar to that general five-year rule, it also starts on January 1st of the year you made that first contribution. So, you know, understanding kind of the benefits of converting from a traditional into a Roth and understanding that age requirement there can help navigate your distributions. Thanks for the call. All right, let's talk a little bit about all of this financial data that we are now getting, right? After a 7-week delay from the government shutdown, the U.S. finally released its September jobs data, and it showed a surprise gain of 119,000 jobs, more than double the expectations. At the same time, the unemployment rate ticked up to 4.4%, which is its highest level in 4 years, as nearly half a million people re-entered the labor force. Now, the report gives the Fed its first clean snapshot of the labor market since early fall, but the data, it's stale. It offers little clarity on where the conditions stand right now. Job gains were concentrated in those familiar strongholds that we've been seeing for quite some time. Now, you're talking about healthcare, talking about education, leisure, hospitality. While revisions showed, the summer was a bit weaker than previously reported. August payrolls, for example, were revised to a loss of 4,000 jobs, and July's growth was trimmed, meaning these 2 months collectively saw 33,000 fewer jobs than thought earlier. Now, markets initially cheered the headline about job gains, but stocks reversed a bit as investors weighed what the mixed signals are going to mean for the Fed, right? Are you going to now cut rates more aggressively or less aggressively at the December policy meeting? Now, weekly jobless claims released alongside this report showed that layoffs haven't really exploded, but continuing claims climbed to their highest levels since 2021. And so what that does is that signals that workers are struggling to find new jobs. And the Fed is now even, you know, divided even more. Hawks are pointing to the job gains as justification to wait on rate cuts. Doves are highlighting this rising unemployment and softer hiring trends, meaning this push-pull of what we're going to see in December is having a picture that is more and more muddy. Now, the shutdown ensured that Thursday's report is the last data the Fed will see before its December meeting. The November jobs report won't arrive until after that rate decision. Sector-level details show retailers, construction firms, hospitality, healthcare, and government added workers, while transportation, warehousing, and that temporary help, all early recession indicators, shed jobs. The report also hinted at the labor market's effect of the administration's immigration crackdown, with native-born employment rising as foreign-born employment fell, though, you know, those figures can be a bit volatile. Broadly, the economy still shows, frankly, more resilience than even we have been expecting. Strong Q3 corporate earnings, rising home sales, and solid revenue growth coexist with this clear consumer stress, especially among lower-income households, leaving the labor market steady, but far from settled. InvestTalk, now with more than 62 million downloads. Let's play another question now.
Hello, this is Ezekiel from Missouri. I was just wanting your thoughts on an interesting pharmacy stock. The company name is Bright Springs Health Services, and the ticker is B as in boy, T as in Tom, S as in Sam, G as in girl. It started out back in January of 2024, and it's gone up quite considerably in the last year. Year to date, it's almost 100%. My son works there, works for one of the companies, and he was gifted $5,000 worth at the time, so it's done well. But I'm just curious about long term what you might see the stock at. With that 32.26 now, it started back in 2024 around $11 in January. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on long term. Thank you.
Sure. Bright Spring Health Services, ticker BTSG, is a U.S.-based home and community healthcare services platform. So they provide both pharmacy and provider services. So you're talking your infusions, your injections, your oral medications, your home health and rehab. You know, we always tell, or I often mention, that empirically speaking, investing in IPOs has a negative gain, right? It has losses. And that's an aggregate. It doesn't mean that every IPO a year later is going to perform poorly. In fact, this one has performed pretty well since its IPO at the beginning of 2024. Looks like it IPO'd at $11 a share by the end of 2024, and margins are projected to expand a bit. Now, margins are slim, even if you look at EBITDA margin. About 4.5% in 2024, only projected to expand at 4.8% in 2025. That's probably why, in spite of this growth, they're trading at a relatively reasonable valuation compared to their five-year average, about 25 times price to forward-looking earnings, 3.2 times price to book value. Now, you know, it looks like they are, or rather they recently completed a secondary offering, which diluted shareholders a bit, meaning they're issuing new shares. Could they issue new shares on the horizon, dilute you even further? That is certainly a possibility here. Now, this company hasn't been around long enough in terms of its public trading to say it's a serial issue of shares, but that's certainly one concern that I have right there. In terms of debt, they got about $2.7 billion of debt on a $7.1 billion market cap company. That's a decent amount of a debt, especially for a company that is issuing shares. Now, I do like the trend here, right? We have an aging population. They're servicing Medicaid. They're servicing Medicare. And with that, with the aging population, maybe a propensity for wanting to have that home health service option. But, you know, in spite of that, you know, I think margins here, especially in a time where we're heading into some contractionary territory, margins look a little bit weak to me to justify that 25 times price to forward-looking earnings. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that this company is a poor investment. It's just on the more expensive side. Frankly, I'd have to dive into it a little bit more, but it definitely looks interesting to me. That is Bright Springs Health Services, BTSG. Thanks for the call. Looks like we got a great new voicemail that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART, so let's play that now.
Hello. Just hoping you guys could take a look at Carnival Cruises, ticker CCL. It looks like it's a good value here. It looks like they've been paying back a lot of their debt. It's like they've been growing earnings since the pandemic. I think there's still a desire to travel, and perhaps maybe people being a little bit more budget-friendly, they would switch to Carnival from like a Royal. It's like oil prices, which I'm sure is a big cost for cruise lines, is kind of stabled out at where it's at now, which isn't too pricey. So I just think it might be a good buy here, but I'll like to hear what you guys think on the show. Thank you. Bye.
Carnival Cruises, of course, the famous global leisure company. They have, well, you guessed it, cruise lines. Now, they did really poorly during the pandemic because, unsurprisingly, nobody wanted to get on a boat and they didn't have any cruises. So you saw their price drop off dramatically, 57% in 2020, another 7% in 2021. and about 60% in 2022 before climbing back a remarkable 130 and 34% respectively in 2023 and 2024. This year, though, they've kind of turned back to normal year-to-date performance, 1.61%, down 13.47% over the past 3 months. And the reason being, well, revenue growth has slowed dramatically. Projected revenue set to grow from $25 billion in 2024 to about $26.6 billion this upcoming fiscal year end. At the same time, net income growing at a pretty solid clip, up from $1.9 billion to $2.9 billion. Margins expanding a bit from 7.7% net margin to 11.1% net margin. But they got a lot of debt, $27 billion of debt on a $36 billion market cap company. Now, they've seen strong demand coming out of the pandemic. They've seen a pretty decent booking rate for 2025 and 2026. And that's led them to get some pretty solid utilization of their fleet. But at the same time, you have cost pressures. Despite this top line, strength, you're seeing increasing costs, especially if you look at their ex-fuel costs. Yes, oil is down. Fuel cost is down. If they are smart, and I'm sure they are, they're probably locking in a lot of these fuel costs now with various hedging tools, right? Like options, like futures, like forwards. And so that could be a good thing, but they're carrying a substantial amount of debt and their ex-fuel costs are increasing. And we're moving into a time where consumers are a bit strained. So may they move towards lower budget options? Certainly. May they move towards the more likely scenario, which is cutting back from vacations entirely? Probably. So, you know, not seeing a lot of strength here, especially given the strength in 2023 and 2024. So in spite of this pullback over the past 3 months, I'm a little hesitant to move into this vacation leisure company. So for now, I'd have to pass on Carnival Corporation, ticker CCL. Thanks for the call. This is InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero. We have one goal here, to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work continues after our final break, so get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now Luke Guerrero is here. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, this is Andrew from Atlanta. I was trying to call you guys about Eastman Chemical Company. I've held it for a while. It hasn't done very well. It's down quite a bit, but I'm seeing some buying, some recommendations to where this might be a good time to buy. Could you please run down the fundamentals and advise me if this would be a good time to buy, or what would be a good price to buy, or should I just get out of this altogether? I'll listen to the show. Thanks, guys. Y'all have a great day. Bye.
Eastman Chemical, ticker EMN, is a $6.6 billion specialty chemicals company. So they produce advanced materials, additives, and functional products, chemical intermediaries, fibers, et cetera, et cetera. Now, it's had a bit of a rough year. Down 38.27% year to date, down 44% over the past 52 weeks, down 16% over the past 3 months. And in spite of outperforming its industry in 2024, 2025 has just been the opposite. They have been an underperformer here. Now, they don't really have a crazy amount of debt for their business, about $4.6 billion in debt. But revenue has just really fallen off. And to me, this is something that is cyclical here, right? They're facing meaningful demand headwinds, at least for now. And so this is given, you know, in what is a cyclical industry, a lot of stress here. It's led to a bit of margin compression. You're seeing EBIT margin fall from 14.3% to 10.9% this upcoming year. Seeing net margin fall from 9.7 to 7.2. I think it's a solid company. You know, we hold it in one of our strategies. It's been probably one of the worst performers within that strategy. but it's just suffering from cyclical issues here. I'm not really seeing much to worry about the business. And now at the same time, it's trading at 9.2 times price to forward-looking earnings. You know, when this thing starts to turn, I think it might be a good opportunity to really buy into a name that has suffered from those headwinds. That is Eastman Chemical Company, ticker EMN. Before we head off, I got to mention global markets have been a bit rattled this month. And now stress is really spilling over into one of the most stable corners of finance, investment-grade corporate bonds. A broad sell-off triggered by AI overinvestment fears and delayed U.S. economic data pushed stocks down nearly 3% in November, and that's before today. But investment-grade bonds, usually the safest corporate funding channel, they've been holding a bit firm. Now, the calm is now cracking as major asset managers warn that investment-grade debt has become too expensive and too complacent given both rising macro and credit risks. Behind the concern is a borrowing spree, big tech, which has tapped IG markets for tens of billions to build out their massive AI data centers, is raising questions about overcapacity, returns, and future leverage. At the same time, the private credit world is flashing warning signs after Blue Owl limited withdrawals, an echo of stress that could spill into public markets. Now, portfolio managers overseeing more than $10 trillion say that they are trimming IG exposure, taking profits, or outright shorting the asset class because spreads are near multi-decade lows. IG spreads sit just 10 basis points above their tightest levels in 27 years, leaving almost no cushion if growth slows or credit losses rise. Fidelity's macro chief called IG bonds the best bang for buck hedge against an economic downturn because their valuations leave ample room for a sharp repricing. The concern is a feedback loop. Higher borrowing costs, squeeze profits, pressure share prices, weaken investment plans, and ultimately tighten credit spreads even further. Oracle is already feeling these tremors. After a wave of tech borrowing, its five-year CDS costs have jumped 44% in a month. That could be a sign that investors are demanding more protection. As regulators scrutinize private credit lending standards and investors kind of start to pull back here from riskier funds, newly issued corporate bonds may face higher yields to attract financing. With delayed U.S. data set to hit markets soon, as it did and started to today, and valuations a bit stretched, major allocators are starting to say that maybe IG credit is no longer priced for uncertainty, leaving a once boring asset class suddenly in the spotlight. I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads at iTunes and Spotify. And while you're over there, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. If today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, whether it's all really working together, we would love to talk. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and confidence to your daily life. Just head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. And lastly, a quick reminder, our newest InvestTalk Wealth webinar is set for Tuesday, December 9th, happening online and free, but don't forget, you have to pre-register at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.